Okay, Tokyo, Australia, Germany.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And here we go on this, the 11th day of August, 2016. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is, of course, where we live. And I can tell you that for this Thorn in the Side Thursday, it is a, it's a mite muggy 82 degrees here in the fabulous Horn Kincaid Mansion Studios. Hard by the hangar for the Gulfstream 5 and the porte cochere for the Bentley. Yes. Well, I mean, the Bentley's a rental. The Maybach's in the shop, you know. I thought you said you had a Hemi. I do. It's in the shop. It's mite toasty. There's something about the slanting rays of the August sun that makes Appalachia, even when it's only up in the mid to high 80s, rather ovenish. And it are. You're welcome, however, to join in the cool, cyber-conditioned comfort of the Horn chat room. If you've never been there, it's easy. Just go over to headonradionetwork.com, click on chat room, pick yourself out a screen name and a password, and you will be joyfully met by Anatole, Hoghead, Jugapunch, Jules, Steve from Georgia, Stan, Tim from L.A., and capably moderated by longtime, inveterate, indefatigable chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a third-stage guild navigator, has not folded space because it's probably like a million degrees in the Arakeen settings of Northern California, and Hoghead tells me to quit grumping because it's 99 degrees somewhere in Missouri, Stan, I do believe. Mm-hmm. All of us can just shut the right up, because I had a note from Ron, who is far, 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 far away from the frozen north, who tells me it's about a billion degrees in the sandbox over in the United Arab Emirates, where climate change is no more of a reality than it is back here in the other hemisphere. Right, right. Yes. We'll just shut right the... And you will also be capably moderated by somewhat fatigable, periodic, occasional chat room moderator, Texas Betsy. Hi, Betsy. So that pretty much sets the stage. Big thanks going out overnight to our subscribers. Thanks to Dennis and Ralphs and Tony and John and... and Mike in Washington, all of whom made it possible for me to say that, yes, we are almost even for fundraising this evening. We've got $215 to go on the evening and $415 to go on the week. And, well, you know, bills await and paying, so... Hopefully we will we'll get where we need to be this evening. And thanks again to Tracy, the lady cab driver there in Southern California, for her challenge last night, and those who responded there too, and everyone who have kept us even, everyone who has kept us even. I'm not sure if my English is British or English, or I don't know, but everybody who's kept us even during the week thus far. So, yeah, 215 for the evening, 415 for the week. Getting out front by a couple of bucks would be lovely. We'll just, you know how it goes. One at 215. Oh, Jesus. Just dividing by two. Because two at 107.50. Yeah. 21 and a half at 10. 10 at 21.50. All of that. All of that. So if you would like to help out, go by headonradionetwork.com, click on the tab Contribute, and you'll see a screen there. If you'd like to become one of the many, one of the not so many, but very, very, very much appreciated subscribers as we climb back toward 100 again. Well, we've been climbing. They fall off. They come. You come, but anyway, click the box that says make this a recurring monthly donation. And you'll be well on the way. Just fill out the rest of the fields. We don't care how you work, where you work, who you work for. Leave that alone. Just get to the next screen. That's all. It's always about that's where the PayPal or the Visa, MasterCard, Discover, yada, yada, yada takes place. Hey. Yeah, very, very funny. Very funny. Brother Deacon Gerald says, don't forget Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, Acts. Oh, wait a minute. And 2 Corinthians walk into a bar. Right. So it is Thorn in the Side Thursday on the horn. And yes, oh yes. We've got us some thorns. Oh, the mailing address. I forgot the mailing address. Like I did, because I gotta go. I gotta figure out how to get back into the into the website. The mailing address. The horn. 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318 Beckley, Beckley, WV 25801. Checks, money orders made payable to the horn, not made payable to Bob Kincaid. Send me an email. Let me know. I'll tell Boss Man Wayne to be on the lookout. He can leave his spider-proof gloves back in the big red truck of justice, and they'll take nothing with him except the old family Serbian shillelagh in case he runs into a Klansman when he goes into the UPS store to pick up our mail. Mm-hmm. You didn't know there was an old family Serbian shillelagh, did you? There is. Just ask Boss Man Wayne, who, by the way, is very, very happy right now. Well, not very, very happy, but certainly pleased. Something good happened yesterday. You might recall my having mentioned... Oh, thank you, Randy. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. Did I do that? Tim didn't remind me. Oh, there's Tim. Tim reminding me and Randy reminding me. What's your name? Yeah, I'm Bob Kincaid. Yep. So we got that taken care of. Now, Boss Man Wayne is pleased, as are a number of folks in West Virginia right now. You may recall my having mentioned, and Gerald having mentioned, that our teabagging legislature, taking their orders, of course, from the Koch brothers, who own them, lock, stock, and stinking toxic waste barrel. One of the first things they did in this latest session was to pass a right-to-work law, which means, of course, that what they're trying to do is kill off, once and for all, organized labor in the state of West Virginia. As is, as is the goal and ambition of Republicans everywhere. Remember, just because we're in an atypical, asymmetrical presidential campaign year where the head of the ticket is an orange tomato bug, per our buddy Jennifer in Australia, it doesn't mean Republicans have stopped being the nasty, brutish individuals they so often are. And so it was that last winter, the ninthers, tenthers, baggers, birchers, deathers, libertarians, booger eaters, all Republicans, what have you, passed themselves a right to work law in the state of West Virginia. But they didn't. The people who were in the process of getting hurt didn't take it lying down. No, they went to court. And they had their hearing yesterday in the Circuit Court of Kanawha County, West Virginia, where they made a damned interesting argument. Now, understand, the way right to work works is that deadbeats don't have to join a union, but they are at one and the same time entitled to all of the good offices of union membership. It's kind of like saying that everybody has to buy car insurance, but if you're a right-wing deadbeat POS, you can just drive like a maniac and demand that everybody else cover you, just in case. They're deadbeats. They're maybe a few microns above scabs, frankly, which, remember, if you recall your labor history, are the lowest form of life that lives. And so it is that they went to court, and labor, the lawyer arguing on behalf of labor organizations in West Virginia, did make a very creative and very inspiring argument. Namely, that the right to work statute constitutes an illegal taking of property and services in violation of the Constitution of the United States of America. They made this argument because it's true. Because I just described it exactly as it happens. The deadbeats, well, I don't pay no union dues. My union don't do nothing for me. You know, until they get, you know, fired for being drunk on the job or whatever. And the union steps up and says, no, he's not that bad a guy. You know, you know, we got a contract here. You got to keep him. You know, collective bargaining and all that stuff. You can't just arbitrarily fire somebody. And the deadbeat gets to keep his job, at which point he can go back to saying, I don't need no union. I don't want to pay no union dues. You want no health care? You want no pension? Well, I mean, I want all them things, I just want them for free. Lo and behold, it turns out that your right-wing POSs are the ones who want the free stuff. Mm-hmm. And so unions, under the scheme of right to work, unions have to represent these deadbeat dipshits at their own expense, without the deadbeat dipshit ever contributing so much as a damn penny to his or her own well-being. And when you put it like that, and it was sort of put that way without words like dipshit yesterday, when you put it like that, it's kind of hard not to realize that, yeah, the legislature is compelling a taking of goods and services from the union. And so, and this is where the happy news comes in, ta-da! The Circuit Court of Kanawha County issued a preliminary injunction against the right to work law taking effect. This is what we often refer to as, and we look to that sage and philosopher, Vice President Joe Biden. This is what we call a big fucking deal. Yeah, only because it is. Labor victories are few enough and far enough between that you damn sure got to celebrate them when you get them. Now, of course, this is far from over. Uh, but it is it's very much it'll wind up in the Supreme Court. Meanwhile, right-wing car dealer, gubernatorial candidate, Senate President Bill Cole of Mercer County said, "It's disappointing that the court has taken the extraordinary step of enjoining a duly enacted law that is consistent with those of 25 other workplace freedom states. However, we are confident that the Supreme Court of Appeals will find this law to be legally sound, and this injunction will only temporarily delay fucking West Virginians out of decent..." Oh, wait a minute. "Providing all West Virginians the freedom of choice in the workplace."
Yeah, freedom of choice. That's what it's all about. They can choose to pay dues like good, upstanding members of the community, or they can choose to be goddamn deadbeats and still get all the benefits of membership. Because membership hath its privileges. And remember, ultimately, the goal of Right to Work is to make sure there is no union so that everybody is at the tender mercies of people like Bill Cole, who think that if you make $50,000 a year in West Virginia, you earn what he describes, and these are his words, an unfairly high wage.
Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, a guy named Steve Roberts, who's president of the West Virginia Chamber of Commerce, said that there at the chamber, they're attempting to understand Judge Bailey's decision, which we believe is contrary to the clear intent of the West Virginia legislature to fuck the living daylights out of West Virginia. I mean, to put West Virginia in the majority of states that have enacted right-to-work legislation. The language used in West Virginia's law is almost identical to the language that has been used and upheld in the majority of states that have right-to-work laws.
Of course it's nearly identical. It was drafted by the same bunch of rat-fucking sons of bitches who drafted the other ones. You know, the Koch brothers. Or their minions, lackeys, allies, toadies, lick spittles, turd burglars.
Mm-hmm. So, you watch this space. And there is sort of a Republican majority, I believe, on the West Virginia Supreme Court. So it may be a brief victory, at best. But damn! But don't you have to celebrate them when you get them? Yeah. Absolutely. Hey, Brother Deacon Gerald of the Building and Grounds Committee, I think I know why you've been having internet problems. Headline, police arson at Suddenlink substation caused $1 million in damage. Oh, no, that was early this morning. Huh. Somebody broke into the Suddenlink substation located near Guthrie, West Virginia, cutting through a fence and then stole telecommunications equipment and set several fires in the area. Now, see, that'll get people pissed off. That'll get people marching in the streets. The internet's out. Damn it. Yeah. So, yeah, just a little taste of the hills as we get this thorn in the side Thursday underway. Got a lovely note from our buddy Jen down under, up over. It's all a matter of perspective when you're in space. There's no up, there's no down, right? "Hey, Bob, last Friday I busted a gut at your Scottish crusty smear. I really needed a laugh, and you delivered in spades. We give you raw material, you spin it into gold." It could have even been used as a Star Trek reference in a pinch. "Aye, Admiral, There be crusty smear here. Still, the phrase just kind of grosses me out even yet. The crusty smear. Ah, that's just breakfast. Jen continues, then I tuned in for more on Monday, and it's uncanny. You and Carol Baker are all about Shakespeare after I spent the weekend in an introspective mood, rugged up in the hammock with my complete works, where I had a dozing daydream that you and I performed radio theater, Hamlet, Act 3, Scene 1, for Jay Cruzan, who I guess is on my mind because I guess he will not be facilitating my challenge, to wit, a fair, friendly chat between the two of you. Hang on here. Oh, great. I love it when they update my Skype and I... Some of us don't use mice. Come on. A fair, friendly chat between the two of you. It would have been a bomb. Oh, well, I suppose it was a weird, presumptuous sort of challenge. Hopefully this alternative to that will be some fun. Quick preamble. I am fascinated by cave art. So am I. I love what it means, or what we wonder about what cave art means in the caves of northern Spain, France, what have you. Jennifer says, clusters of ochre-colored hand outlines are interesting enough, but it's the animals that are, to me, transfixing. Such images have almost become a cliché, damn it. And while I prefer the artworks in my meager collection to be the genuine article, artists' hands having touched surfaces and real photographs and the like, one cannot purchase a slab off the wall of a cave, so a print must suffice. I scanned the web and found the most tasteful images in the highest quality I could find in my budget. Somehow I clicked twice and distractedly bought two copies of each. Enclosed, and I have seen them here, are bad phone shots of mine. In my opinion, they frame up very nicely. So, fundraiser! I have two gallery-quality prints available to two contributors. Note, they have been rolled up in a tube for a while, so they'll need to spend a few days under five beanbags, one in each corner and one in the center, before they can be matted. Better images than I provided are easy enough to Google. One, cave painting of swimming stags at Lascaux, France. And two, Stone Age cave paintings, Bison, Chauvet, France, C009/7645RM. I remember a while back that you had a number of, if memory serves, painted feathers, which you posted out to folks who donated a certain sum, and remember that was a success, although the Palmans made me drool. I suppose cave art is an even more specific genre, but surely a few people share my appreciation, so I'd be happy to post them on your behalf to the first two takers. I can't remember exactly what I paid for them, and note, in Australia we pay a lot more for things that are available in the States much cheaper. That said, I think they're worth about $75 Australian each, plus the freight I paid from the Netherlands rounds it close enough to $100 Australian, $75 U.S. dollars. You'll have a better idea of what they're worth up there. Goes without saying, local Aussie contributors would be great. No pesky Australian Post International Customs paperwork, although either way, I'm happy to post them anywhere. You know, right before airtime, I clicked on Skype, and it said, we're updating your Skype experience to make it even more Skype-y. Yeah, it sucks, Skype. So there it is, and we'll call it $100. We'll call it $100 because Jen made the kind offer. She'll have to go through all the time and of mailing and everything. So we have two, and isn't that lovely? We have two high quality prints of cave art, swimming stags and bison. And I have seen the photographs, courtesy of her phone, and they are beautiful. So, for a $100 contribution, Jen in Australia will ship to you one of the same. Or if you want both of them, two. Okay? And I tell you what, we'll do it this way. Send me an email, bobkincaid@gmail.com. First in gets first choice. And I'll let you know whenever that happens. So the first one in with $100 will get your choice of the swimming stags or the bison. And the second person in gets the one that the first person didn't choose. But it's not like it's a loss. So just let me know. And that's a lovely fundraiser. I love that kind of thing. I'd really love to see the caves in France too, but that's another issue. But thank you very kindly, Jen, for your very, very generous and kind-spirited offer. By the way, she adds, just listening to Titanic Tuesday, oh my God, the Green News Report, anthrax being released via Arctic thaw, a metaphor for Obama's election, releasing the trapped racism in Merkin society. Graham says, turn it off, Shakespeare Radio Theater would be much better listening, LOL. And I understand that, but by the same token, you really can't turn it off. You can't get away from it. Just like we're sort of stuck in this cesspit of Trumpian misery. You can hide from it. You can run from it. But you're not going to ever get completely shed of it. And this is, you know, this is the first election cycle I can remember. And God knows I'm trying not to lecture. But this is the first election cycle I can remember where there has been a threat that if the nastiness may not end with an outcome in November. And it really is something that if you pay attention to politics, society, culture, what have you, in this country, can't help but be more than a little bit, well, unsettling. And depending on who you are and how you feel about these things, terrifying. So, anyway, and we've got, of course, the Green News Report tonight as well. And God only knows what kind of nightmare will come with that. But that's interesting, that the metaphor that Jen pulled out of it, the idea that, that the election of Barack Obama was like the thawing of the permafrost that allowed all of our vile and filthy racism to escape into our body politic. Because, that's not a criticism of Obama. You can argue that it is actually beneficial that we finally came to terms with just how vile, nasty, hateful, and racist this country remains even today. Because you can't cure or even attempt to cure a sickness that no one knows you have. But I mentioned the slanting rays of August sun, where in July we'd close the program at 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, and there would still be a right smart amount of light in the air. That's all over now. We are well and truly downhill toward the dimming of the days and the winter solstice. hard to imagine in this kind of heat and humidity, or the heat and humidity of, say, Missouristan, or, you know, Abu Dhabi. But we are. And the other thing that's happened is that school is back in session, at least here in almost level West by Cole, Virginia, Stan. And it's in session other places, too. It's in session in, you know, Chicago. Or getting ready to be. Used to be the coming of the school year meant, you know, smiling, shiny, happy faces, giving up the freedom of summer, and heading back into the world of organized education. We're back in various counties around the state. God knows why. We can't all start on the same day in one little bitty state, but no, we're West by God, Virginia, Stan, and we'll start some on a Tuesday and some on a Monday, and I don't know. Maybe they're trying to gauge if there's any continuing interest. But as school gets close to beginning in the greater Chicagoland area, and if you live in the Chicago area, you have to call it Chicagoland. Never really understood that. I never heard anybody say Nashville land or Atlanta land or New York land, but it's Chicago land. And the school year will begin with a brand new lawsuit. Suit having been filed today by a woman named Marlena Wardlow, on behalf of her daughter, Madison Moore. Madison Moore is now a traumatized child. Madison Moore is not one of those mouthy teenagers or angst-ridden adolescents. No. Madison Moore is a 6-year-old little girl. And last March, Madison Moore, who was then probably a 5-year-old little girl, or, I don't know, maybe she was 6 already, she was accused of taking a piece of candy, you know, without permission. In the suit against the Chicago Public Schools, Ms. Wardlow alleges that little Madison was dragged from under the stairs with her hands behind her back. Her mama said, I don't know how long she was under there, but she was sweating. She still had on a jacket. It was warm outside, so I'm trying to figure out why she still had her jacket on. Among other things, the guard there, the school legal resources officer, handcuffed 6-year-old Madison Moore. Her mama said, it's not about the lawsuit. It's about letting people know you can't treat children like that. She's only 6. Fernwood Elementary School. Anybody remember Fernwood tonight? Fernwood seems to have changed a bit. So, upon an allegation a 6-year-old child an allegation of piece of candy larceny. A 6-year-old gets handcuffed behind her back and now has an abiding terror of the dark and is scared beyond reason of anyone wearing a police uniform. I doubt that I even have to mention, but I will for the sake of factuality, that little Madison is black. Got to start early. You have to be carefully taught. I'm guessing Ms. Wardlow, Mama, will not have to have the talk with her daughter because that's already been taken care of by the Chicago public school system. Texas Betsy tells me that she read something recently that we start school earlier and earlier to get as much instructional time as possible before state standardized testing in April. That's kind of the way it works around here, because after the standardized testing's over, there's nothing left to test, nothing left to teach. And so it's just all wasted time. Oof. But then again, summer vacations are a relic of a bygone rural and agrarian economy, where young Caiaphas would have to, and his brother Ebenezer would have to get out of school early to help Pa with the plowing and the sowing and the planting and the reaping and the harvesting, at which point they could go back to school to be a learning of their letters. Different world. Different world. And moving on, a question. If you could, would you take a county government sponsored course in how county government works? Yeah, maybe it would be 8 sessions long in your county. Maybe as many as 35 people, there would be spots for them. And the idea would be to teach people, local civics. You know, what the city council does, how the library commission works, that kind of thing. Well, they had one of those. They called it an academy in Florida. And here's the part I don't understand. Part of the Academy of How County Government Works featured what was called a shoot, don't shoot role-playing situation. Yes, yes, this is how the city council works. You know, there's 5 members of the city council and 15 members of the city council. Then there's the county commission. The county commission is, and they're elected every 4 years, off years. So we always rotate. You know, there's always 2 commissioners up for election every election cycle. So yada 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 yada. And when the county runs the landfill and blah 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 blah, 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 the civics on a very local level. But somewhere in this eight-session academy, there really was a shoot, don't shoot. Role-playing situation. Again, in Punta Gorda, Florida. Two of the students of the Citizen Police Academy were selected to participate in the role-playing situation. Punta Gorda Police Chief Thomas Lewis said that the purpose of it was to use simulated lethal force. And, of course, it had multiple scenarios because the purpose of this, I suspect, was to help citizens of Punta Gorda spread propaganda, pro-police propaganda, that the police, when they have to kill someone, you know, usually somebody, you know, that color, that they're always justified because you never know when one of those 30 or 35 people are going to show up on a grand jury now, don't you? I see. See how? Oh, clever, clever. There's only one problem. They went through the first scenario of the shoot, don't shoot role-playing situation simulation, and that is when Mary Knowlton, formerly a librarian from Minnesota who had moved south to the sunny climes of Florida, found out just how deadly the sunny climes of Florida can be. Because in the shoot, don't shoot simulation, they decided to shoot, and Mary Knowlton got all dead. What was supposed to be a blank in the gun, we can talk about why you even need a blank in that situation, turned out to be a live round. You know, the kind the police in Punta Gorda routinely use on the citizenry. As the AP story puts it, she was rushed to a hospital where she was pronounced dead. Chief Lewis said it was a, quote, horrible accident. Chief Lewis, who only became chief this past March, said, our entire police department and all of our city leaders are absolutely devastated for everyone involved in this unimaginable event. I'm asking that if you pray, you pray for Mary's husband and family and for all the officers and witnesses that involved this incident. Everyone involved is in an overwhelming state of shock and grief. Pray also for our risk management department that the check they write to Mary's husband will not be too inordinately large because, because money. No, he didn't add that part. I did. But the reason this made it into the stack was the first part of that quote. Thank you, Hoghead in the chat rooms, and thoughts and prayers. Anatole saying, ready, fire, aim, Mr. Bob. VT Bloms is in the jail, not Florida again. I'm developing a complex. Not my fault. No, the way it made it into the stack was the sentence about our entire police department and all of our city leaders are absolutely devastated for everyone involved in this unimaginable event. Well, apparently they don't have much in the way of an imagination down there. Who could have imagined a few years ago that a 16-year-old boy walking back home with a can of Arizona iced tea and a bag of Skittles would wind up all dead because George Zimmerman. Or any number of other horrors that take place in Florida day after day after day after day, because Florida is nothing more than a laboratory filled with unwilling participants in a grand social experiment foisted upon them by the by the largest, most powerful, most well-funded terrorist organization in the world, the National Republican Rifle Association. Unimaginable. My left hind foot. It's a horrible case. And yes, see, I think when you say, well, you know, we're not going to use real bullets, folks. We're only going to use blanks. It's going to be really loud and really scary, and you'll understand the gravity involved. Hell, you can be hurt by a blank. And if it weren't for the fact that the police felt like they needed to create a little propaganda unit, you know, just in case anybody ever winds up on a jury or a grand jury, this wouldn't have happened. Were they trying to make it sexy, exciting? You know, civic participation in government isn't always sexy or exciting. It's just what we do to have civil society. I mean, goddamn, did the participants in this here Citizen Academy, did they go out and ride on the garbage trucks and throw simulated bags of garbage into the garbage truck? No. Did they spend a day at a simulated library desk? No. You know, maybe they attended a simulated county commission meeting. Okay. But understand with something like this, and this is why it makes it into Thorn in the Side Thursday, somebody thought this up, told someone else, and both of those people said, "This is a great idea." And nobody involved with the process ever thought, hey, what if somebody screws up and puts a live round into their service weapon instead of a blank? And drilling down a little bit deeper, nobody ever said, hey, do we really need the blank? And taking it another level down, nobody said, hey, do we really need a real gun in this? There is no truth whatsoever to the fact that Ms. Knowlton was attacking the police officer with a banana. Jesus, people. All the heartbreak, all the absolutely avoidable heartbreak. But we have to have these things because freedom. And by the way, just as an aside, well, yes, as a matter of fact, Carol Baker, wasn't actor Brandon Lee killed with a blank? I think. Or what they thought was a blank. But I think it was a blank. I think you're right. That's another thing that didn't enter into the consideration of anyone there at the Citizens Academy in Punta Gorda. Because, you know, thinking is so overrated. Now, ancillary to this, you may recall back in January that Facebook announced that it would no longer be permissible on Facebook to engage in the sales of firearms. How'd that work out? Well, the answer is it didn't. Alex Kantrowitz over at BuzzFeed News. I used Facebook to buy an AR-15 semi-automatic rifle. Facebook banned the coordination of private gun sales earlier this year, but it's still easy to arrange the purchase of firearms on its platform. I should know. I bought one. Finding my gun on Facebook was simple since firearms are openly posted for sale there. I asked to join a gun-themed Facebook group on a Friday, was approved within hours, saw the Delton DT Sport AR-15 variant posted on Sunday night, sent a private message Monday, signed the paperwork Tuesday. It was easy. The biggest hassle was the California law that made me wait 10 days from the time I bought the gun until I could pick it up. Ultimately, I walked away with an AR-15 and an understanding that Facebook's policy, enforced as it is today, makes little sense. So it looks like Facebook has some work to do. A little bit of work to do. Now let's check in on the email bag. Ron and Raleigh noting subject line killed by a blank. Up-and-coming actor John Eric Exum was also killed by a blank. Fake bullet, real death. From Steve, and we thought standing in the corner was rough. Getting handcuffed is a traumatic experience at any age. As a teenager or adult, it leaves you with a feeling of absolute vulnerability and scares the shit out of anyone who isn't a born sociopath. I can't imagine what it does to a child. When there's no way for the child to even articulate what is happening, it must amount to something like stark, raving terror. Why on earth are we allowing these sorts of idiots to do these horrid things to our children? And it's happening all the time. Over here, a Chinese policeman would not believe such a thing is even conceivable. Their children are loved and cherished. Regards, Steve in China. Meanwhile, down in Punta Gorda, the police officer who blew away 73-year-old Mary Knowlton has a history of excessive force complaints. Lee Cole, C-O-E-L, has been placed on a paid vacation after he blew away Mary Knowlton Tuesday night. Cole is a canine police officer. He's been accused of allowing his police dog to attack a man while on patrol. That case is already in civil litigation. And so he'll keep cashing his check because he's on administrative leave. Yeah. Also in Florida, there's a pending motion to dismiss charges of attempted murder against Sean Barnes. Sean Barnes has couched his motion to dismiss under Florida's Stand Your Ground law. Sean Barnes shot his ex-girlfriend in the face in the restroom at Denny's. It is alleged that he followed his former girlfriend, Brooke Tuchinski, into the women's bathroom in August of 2013, saw her grab a shiny object out of her purse, and then immediately opened fire, striking her in the face and breaking her jaw. Now, a few days prior to that, as they were in the midst of their breakup, because people can't just break up, and no, there's terrible, terrible acrimony involved, and no small amount of violence, because it's just so damn difficult to convince men in the United States not to rape and not to shoot their exes in the face. Barnes told Ms. Tuchinsky, I bought a new gun and would love to use it on you and make it look like an accident or self-defense. Once again, we have the American Legislative Exchange Council, ALEC, a wholly owned subsidiary creature of the Koch brothers, to thank for the Stand Your Ground law in conjunction with the National Republican Rifle Association. Because this is good for Merca. This will help mouthy women learn when to shut up. Meanwhile, Barnes, is, in the way of a defense, is trying to convince the trial judge that Ms. Tuchinsky is the one who is dangerous and unstable. He claims that she set fire to furniture on his porch, slashed his mother's tires, and hacked into his Facebook account. None of which, somehow or another, seem to quite equate with getting shot in the face. Somewhere out there, there's a right-wing evangelical, upstanding Bible-believing, Christ-centered, gun-to-metalist, homosexual who read that story and said, see, see, that's what happens when you let men go into the women's room, women's restroom, see? Yeah. Waitress? I'll have a Grand Slam breakfast, and I'll place my drink order after I reload. Will you want the bacon or the ham? No, ma'am, I want Wolverines! As Carol Baker notes, because sometimes you have to just tell the bitch twice. Damn. Just damn. Tim from L.A. asking the chat room, hey, Bob, doesn't going into the women's restroom manifest intent? Well, it certainly doesn't sound like you're standing your ground. It sounds like you're following the ground. Or walking the ground. Or stalking the ground. Yeah. So here we are at the close of the filibobster for this 11th day of August, 2016. $215 to raise this evening. And I certainly hope we raise it. Because getting in holes is nowhere for us to be. We will take a brief respite. And see what transpires thereafter. Lord, I tell you, the latest Windows 10 update has raised sheer hell with the machine. Fooey. So, a long-distance dedication going out to Mr. Barnes there in South Florida. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. But I
It's Thursday, August 11, 2016.
Those regulations will be eliminated quickly.
Donald Trump's new energy plan, same as the old plan.
I'm excited because there are lots of examples of what's working.
Hillary Clinton calls for helping coal country transition to new industries. Out-of-work coal miners now working to restore abandoned coal mines. Industrial chemicals found in drinking water of 6 million Americans. Plus, court ruling sets major precedent for climate change accountability.
All of that accountability and more straight ahead from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
It will be American hands that rebuild this country.
Tiny, tiny little American hands. This is your Green News Report.
I'm gonna soak up the sun.
Okay, Desi Doyen, it was nice during the primaries to somewhat be able to ignore Donald Trump, but now he's the nominee. Now I guess we got to pay attention to what he's actually saying.
Yes, 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 we do.
Sorry.
Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump pledged a new energy plan for America, but it turns out to be standard Republican Party energy policy. More oil, more coal, and a repeal of environmental regulations. Now, it is an established fact that U.S. energy production is booming, with record domestic oil and gas production and record renewable energy generation and job creation. But in a speech at the Detroit Economic Club on Monday, Trump claimed the exact opposite.
The Obama-Clinton administration has blocked and destroyed millions of jobs through their anti-energy regulations while raising the price of electricity for both families and businesses.
And that's, of course, also false. U.S. electricity rates have remained stable after surging nearly 50% during the Bush administration, according to the Washington Post. Renewable energy is the nation's fastest-growing job sector, and Trump's plan to repeal environmental regulations will increase public health care costs caused by pollution, and increasing fossil fuel use will lock in dangerous climate change. In a recent interview with Pittsburgh's KDKA, the Democratic presidential nominee, Hillary Clinton, reiterated her policy to assist coal country in transitioning away from coal.
We're going to revitalize coal country. Towns that have been really knocked flat, we're going to help them get up. We can do that with infrastructure, advanced manufacturing. We can do that with clean energy.
Also this week, two former EPA administrators who served in Republican administrations have endorsed Secretary Clinton for president. Bill Ruckelshaus of the Nixon administration and the first EPA administrator, in a joint statement with William Riley of the George H.W. Bush administration, wrote that Trump shows, quote, a profound ignorance of science and of the public health issues embodied in our environmental laws, and that Clinton is, quote, committed to reasonable science-based policy.
So the Nixon administrator and the George Bush senior administrator both love Hillary Clinton?
Yep.
Okie dokie.
Meanwhile, as coal use continues to decline around the world, the Obama administration Interior Department broke ground on the first of 14 federally funded coal mine reclamation projects in Pennsylvania. The pilot projects employed laid-off coal miners to clean up toxic mine waste at abandoned coal mines, rehabilitate blighted land, and restore polluted streams. The Obama administration has asked the Republican-controlled Congress to release additional funding from the abandoned Mine Lands Fund to accelerate mine reclamation and employ out-of-work miners.
They should have asked them to not release it. Then maybe they would have.
There you go. A new study of U.S. drinking water systems has found unsafe levels of a class of widely used but unregulated industrial chemicals that have been linked to potentially serious health problems, and they found it in the drinking water of 6 million Americans. According to researchers at Harvard University, quote, virtually all Americans are exposed to these compounds, which never break down once they're released into the environment. Finally, it will now be a little bit harder for industries to block new regulations by federal agencies, such as the EPA and the Energy Department. The Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals has upheld the Energy Department's authority to calculate environmental impacts from climate change when it's creating new energy efficiency standards. In rejecting a lawsuit brought by refrigerator manufacturers to stop new standards, the court's ruling set a huge precedent. It upheld a formula for calculating climate change impacts called the social cost of carbon. That's the estimate of the cost that society bears for damage to the environment and to public health caused by fossil fuel pollution and climate change.
So that's a good thing.
That's a good thing. It makes it more difficult for industries to stop new emissions regulations.
Oh, they'll keep trying. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Don't forget, you can download our reports anytime via Stitcher, TuneIn, or iTunes. Find us and follow us on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
All righty then, 8 minutes past the hour, hour number two of this Thorn in the Side Thursday on the Horn. And we're going to try a little something here. Over in the sandbox, it is, it's like 4 a.m. 2 days from next Friday. But nonetheless, Ron from the frozen north, who ain't freezing, is on the line, I think. Do I have you, Ron?
You got me.
It works.
It works. Damn, ain't science wonderful?
Science!
Yeah, science. That's how it's pronounced in Alabama stamp.
It, well, because it comes from the Latin, proper Latin, scio scire, to know.
Screw-o, screw-o, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yep. It's been some kind of warm over here, son.
Right toasty?
Right toasty.
But it's a dry heat, right?
Wrong.
No?
Wrong. The lowest humidity I've seen has been 52% and runs between 55 and 70 this last few days. Our little stints outside, I brought a weather station with me.
I saw the photo.
And it was warm, somewhat above the official forecast and reports. But I think the warmest I saw was 52 degrees Celsius, which is about 107, 109 Fahrenheit, and the heat index was at 137. And I sent
great tanning folks. Weather.
Yeah. And I sent a few photos along earlier, unedited. I just shot a bunch of pictures and put them up, sent them out. And a guy brought a glass of ice water and a cold Peroni beer from Italy, put them on the table, and 2 minutes later, there was a stream of water 6 inches long from the ice water. The condensation from the outside of the glass just running across the table. I had to take a picture of it, and it was phenomenal. The heat is oppressive, doesn't describe it. So,
well, I wonder how long it would take for that cold beer to be, you know, for your next experiment, I would suggest maybe dropping a thermometer in said beer. And seeing how long it takes in the in that blazing sun for it to reach, you know, that sort of tepid Holiday Inn bar temperature.
We were in the shade, and I would say it would be less than a minute. But
well, that encourages. I mean, then just bring out the funnel and the plastic hose too, right?
Yeah.
Or bring it in a can and bring a nail.
Yeah, we've got unofficial tradition seems to have developed amongst the team here that around 5 o'clock we send out what's called the Bureau Clock message, And half an hour later, we all congregate in the shade around the pool, and I put out the sensor for the weather station, and we just sit there and marvel at the temperatures while we're sitting in the shade, sweltering, dripping. Even in the shade, it was like 105, 108 degrees.
You damn Canadians know how to party, you know that?
Hey, son, we got it nailed.
So there's a pool there. Is there anybody damn fool enough to get in it?
Oh, yeah, because it's chilled water, Bob.
Oh, stop it.
No.
But still, no. You put my pink self in there. I'll be approaching lobsterhood before I'm fully wet.
No, the pool water temperature, I measured it. It's 76 degrees Fahrenheit. It's chilled before it comes into the pool. Yeah.
Well, we have a question coming from Carol Baker, Queen of the Minions. Ask Ron if the airline ever delivered his underwear. I'm asking for a friend.
Repeat that, please.
Ask Ron if the airline ever delivered his underwear. I'm asking for a friend.
Yes. I finally got my luggage after 5 days and no longer have to do nightly laundry in the sink, augmented by the hairdryer. Yes.
You know, I can't imagine even turning a hair dryer on in a place like that.
Yeah.
That is insult way atop injury.
Yeah, but the room temperature is 18 degrees, and I routinely pull up the blanket at night when I'm sleeping. But, yeah, it's been an experience, this trip. Kind of hard to describe. I'm keeping the rage level down regarding the airlines.
And just so people can, I mean, you know, because this is a community and we take care of each other, which airline would that be?
The world's best airline, Air Canada.
Air Canada, we'll lose your drawers and such. No, sorry, those aren't the words, are they?
Well, no, it was a simple transaction. We had 2.5 hours on our layover from Ottawa into Toronto before we got on the Etihad flight. And our bags were tagged, had an RFID code on every tag. And that's so every airline can track exactly where they are. They're all scanned. 2.5 hours. And we got on our flight to Abu Dhabi. And 2 out of 3 of us did not get our bags. One guy got his bag on the 4th day. I got mine on the 5th day, came in earlier today. And at no point in the process did either airline involved ever contact us, send us an email, or anything to say, oh, we're sorry we lost your bag.
Yeah, that's the Harvard management theory known as, shh, maybe if we don't say anything, he won't notice.
They picked the wrong guy.
Is there going to be a problem?
Yeah, I went into full colonel mode at one point, and I suspect I'll be dealing with Air Canada in particular, because they're the ones that lost it. Etihad, when we reported it on this end, knew within 30 seconds exactly where the bags were. They were in Toronto. They had never been loaded.
No, stop it.
Yes.
Maybe they were afraid to get on the plane?
Apparently, yeah.
Got drunk in the bar and passed out your bags?
Yeah. When they arrived at this end, I could tell they'd been gone through at least twice. Because when they arrived on this end, I had sand on my camera, the fine dust. There'd been a dust storm here for several days. Sand on my camera, inside my camera bag, inside my suitcase. So, yeah, it got looked at intensely once it arrived here. A dark blue bag arrives from some foreign country. yeah, they're going to look at it. There's no unaccompanied baggage gets a lot of scrutiny.
Yeah, I was about to say, I can imagine it does. Hey, I've got a question for you. Randy in PA, smart guy, wants to know, what's the dew point when the heat index is 137?
A hell of a lot lower than 137.
Is that a scientific term, a hell of a lot lower?
Yeah, it is, yeah.
Yeah, I'm looking at the photos now, the glass of water and the glass of beer. I'm thirsty, and you know, yep. I'm just sitting here in air conditioned 83 degrees. But it looks a mite hazy in Abu Dhabi.
It are. And that's because the air is cleared up. When we got here it was orange, but it wasn't smog. It was fine dust, like down 0.1 micron.
Oh,
dust.
The good stuff.
Oh, yeah. But, by the way, the beer and the water that was sitting on the table in that photo had been on the table for no more than 2 minutes. It was just amazing to watch. It was like watching a river flow out of nothing. And the water started running across the table. So I had to take a photo. But anyway, I'm just, believe it or not, just finished up before the show started writing stuff. I mean, like I said in another note earlier, I got to get a government job. I mean, this 18-hour day stuff is, I'm getting a little old for it.
Yeah, but that's what they pay the big time loonies for, isn't it?
When's that happened?
Hell, you can't even travel with luggage. What are we talking about here? But I trust that Reverend Craig made the trip, even if your shorts didn't.
Reverend Craig eventually got here, but in the interim, just on spec, when I walked out of the airport, I said to the two guys I was with, I'm seeing a trend here. I'm going to hit the duty-free shop. And I picked up a big bottle of Gentleman Jack. Which, by the way, is not a bad whiskey.
Not shabby. No.
I figured
when you opened your bag and you saw the and you saw the Reverend Craig there, it'd have it posted on it that said Infidel !! Signed J. Daniel.
No, I checked the seal right away. It hadn't been touched. And it's the real stuff. But now we've been rolling from around 7 AM in the morning until midnight, 1 o'clock. Over here every day, and tonight I finally finished up at local time around, I guess, 2:15. I was listening to you while I was finishing a presentation that we're doing tomorrow morning.
Hassenpfeffer?
Yeah, Hassenpfeffer, yeah. And then sometime mid-morning tomorrow, we're free. No more work. I think.
See, I love it when I say something like Hassenpfeffer, because I know Agent Fred down in the bowels of the NSA is going, Hassenpfeffer, damn, how does he know? It's just fun to work random words in. Like we just got to keep, yeah.
I throw in Kartoffel.
Ooh, Kartoffel.
Oh, yeah. Makes wonderful soup.
Ooh. Wait. Don't say anything. Schwarzwalder Kirschtort.
Anyway, I'm going to be home for, we leave out of here tomorrow night, hit the airport about midnight, be on a 2 o'clock flight home, get home about 1:30 in the afternoon. In
what,
Ottawa.
No time for a damn camel ride?
Ain't no way, Jack. Mm-mm. Ain't going near any camels this time. And it's working.
It's working.
Yeah. But
well, did you take volume 2 of the Takeshi Kovacs series with you?
I did. I read it. Yeah.
So you now know all about Martian archaeology.
I do. Interesting theory. I'm waiting on the facts, but it's an interesting theory. I didn't enjoy that one as much as I did the first one.
No, it's a very different one. So now you're off to the third and final. I think I'm on like my fourth reread of the trilogy. I find it all very, very engaging. I think the first is the best, the third is the second best, and the second is the least best.
Yeah.
But by the time you're done, they all form this cohesive whole. And even so, the second one wound up being it still wound up having some of that noir detective fiction about it that played so well in the first one.
Yeah, I loved the first one. I'm going to pick up the third one. Second one didn't turn my crank nearly as much as the first one, but I'm willing to look at it as a whole after I read the third book.
Yeah, and the second one actually manages to make more sense after the third one. Man, between this and Hassenpfeffer and Schwarzwalder Kirschtorte, Agent Fred is going crazy.
Yeah.
VT Blom in the chat room, Ron, noting, uh-oh, now they're speaking foreign languages. Martha, get the feds. Well, hopefully they...
I must say, one of the things that I found interesting on this trip was a couple of days before we arrived, they announced new legislation relating to the use of VPNs, virtual private networks, and such things as Skype and WhatsApp. Under the couple of pretexts, no, I won't say pretext, I'll say justifications. They have rules here, that long-standing, common in many Arab countries, that, first of all, access to pornographic sites is prohibited, period. And they're pretty good at identifying them and blocking them. And services such as WhatsApp, where you can exchange all your conversations end-to-end, are encrypted. You can transmit images, and you can also make phone calls without paying anybody any money. Skype, you can make phone calls. The local phone companies get no money. So between those two justifications, they have imposed some new laws that have some fairly onerous penalties involved against the illicit use of Skype, WhatsApp, etc. So I'm making this call, and I might be breaking the law.
I don't think you are, but then again, I'm not a lawyer, and I don't play one in Abu Dhabi.
Yeah. Well, apparently it's lucrative, but the basic penalty for violating the law, if you're convicted and if you're charged, I presume that would conviction would follow, is 500,000 whatevers, which works out to about 150,000 U.S.
Ah!
Or 5 years. So I want you to know just how much I appreciate the opportunity to share this with you via Skype.
we appreciate it as well, and we hope there are no unforeseen knocks on any doors before because it's a majestic and a noble kingdom, and it would be a shame for such conduct to besmirch their noble, majestic, gracious name.
Well, I'm hopeful because once again, as is seems to happen to me all the time, I'm working for people who know people. So we'll see how it goes.
I think that might help.
Yeah.
And
did you
of
get
course,
that, Brad?
And of course, all we talked about is the high quality of guest services and.
I got to tell you something. I got to brag on
the coolness of the pool.
Yeah, but this hotel, saying to somebody tonight, I've been traveling, strapping on airplanes and traveling for damn near 50 years now. This is one of the top 5 hotels I have ever stayed in. It's not flashy. It's just good. You show up after 4 months, and they go, oh, Mr. Ron, you grew a goatee.
You well, did?
Yeah, I did. The next thing is a rhinoplasty. You know, I just want to fit in. I just want to be one of the guys. You know what I mean? But it's just a marvelous, low-key, very good service hotel. And one of the pictures I posted was from the lady that cleans my room, who remembered me from being here before and made me a little gift. Took a gift towel and turned it into an elephant.
Isn't that neat? I remember seeing that on the Lib Boat Cruise. Towel swans, towel monkeys.
Yeah, and left me a note just said, Mr. Ron, it's nice to have you back. I haven't been here for 4 months, and it's, you know, kind of nice. But, and you know, it's not an ultra-expensive hotel by Abu Dhabi standards. I mean, Christ, you could spend your kid's inheritance here if you wanted to, but the little things that you get when you travel, especially when you don't have luggage, and the staff know it, and send up gifts and shaving kits, and if there's anything we can do to make this situation more tolerable, you just let us know. Okay, I will. But so
did you like go to the Armani boutique and just sort of put it on the and put it on the expense account?
No, I did some research and found out that the airlines, when your luggage is in what's called delayed status, you're entitled to $60 U.S. a day. And on the third day, I finally went out and bought underwear and socks and a couple of shirts. And
Carol, well, you're getting a suggestion courtesy of Brother Deacon Asa in Vancouver.
Oh, I can hardly wait.
Tell him he doesn't get to complain unless he pays the full fare. Plus, next time he ought to maybe swing for Etihad's luxury apartment in the sky. He's probably the only Hornedanista who can afford that kind of action. Were you on? Was it the A380 from Toronto to?
No, I didn't buy my own ticket. I'll be honest, but I did fly business class, and the flight from Ottawa, Toronto, to Abu Dhabi return business class was $8,000 Canadian. They lost my luggage for 5 days. And nobody ever bothered to contact me to even say, we apologize for the inconvenience.
Ah, they. So are you sure it wasn't spelled bidness, B-I-D-N-I-S-S?
Yeah.
Because you got the bidness.
Yeah. Well, I got the bidness. So I'll be sending a note to a couple of airlines, both of which I've been longtime members of, their frequent flyer club, and simply say, you folks need to, something to the effect of, you need to realize I have choices. I don't have to fly your fucking airline to get to Abu Dhabi. And unless this is made right, I won't be flying your fucking airline to Abu Dhabi. And we'll see how that goes. But I intend to vent at some point, but it's going to be a controlled vent.
Well, you'll have to vent very politely to Air Canada. I mean,
No, I don't.
No, Canadian politeness goes out the window.
Yep, with Air Canada, the people's airline. Oh, yeah, it does.
I'm not sure, but I think a certain fricative expletive just got blanked out in the conversation.
Yeah, there's a standing joke that the basic service on Air Canada is some aging flight attendant who does not fit the stereotype of most airlines throwing a box lunch at you, go, here's your lunch, now shut up, sit down, buckle your seatbelt. We're leaving.
So,
there's a rumor. It's entirely unsubstantiated, but many of the current flight attendants for Air Canada were recruited from the airline in East Germany before the wall came
down. You will enjoy your flight.
Yeah.
We have ways of making you enjoy your flight.
I have no complaints about Etihad. They knew right away where the bag was. And they said it never got loaded.
Well, given the fact that it never moved a centimeter from where it got set down, that's not much. That ain't exactly high-level sleuthing, Ron.
Nope. But all the bags have barcodes now. And they knew exactly where it was. It still took 4 days for Air Canada to ship it. And there were two of us out of the three people. And our bags have these great big orange tags put on them that say priority because we're business class. And they still couldn't find them.
Well, there's your problem. You did that. I mean, that's like me shipping something out of my local post office and paying extra for delicate handling.
Yeah. And saying fragile.
Yeah.
In any event, it's been a good trip. Client's still happy.
Good.
And we're coming back again in October and then back again in February. I'm looking forward to February.
Hey, February will be nice.
Yeah, the temperature will be somewhere between 72 to 78.
So what are your airline choices out of Ottawa?
Out of Ottawa, not much. Once I get in Toronto, I can pick KLM, Air France, Etihad, British Airways. Or I could fly from Ottawa to New York, and I've got a...
No Qantas?
No Qantas. No, they don't. Qantas ain't big on flying out of Canada to Europe. The other way, yeah.
That all just goes back to Rain Man. Yeah, Qantas, you know, they're in Cincinnati. Qantas never crashed. Well, that's just great, Raymond. Sorry, can't. My brain, my fault.
I will say I've posted at least four different iterations of the same clip from Good Morning Vietnam to folks since I've got here on the conversation that Adrian Cronauer had with Roosevelt T. Roosevelt. How hot is it? Hot. It's damned hot. And it's so hot I could do crotch cooking. So I've enjoyed.
Well, there's the direct antithesis of food porn. We had a lot of fun food porn on the program last night, Ron. And, well, you've just made everyone forget it.
Yeah, well, I haven't been able to catch many shows. You have to understand, Brother Bob. I've enjoyed the weather. We have a routine every evening of going down to the pool at beer o'clock and putting out the sensor for the weather station, ordering Heineken in 330 milliliter glasses, which disappear quickly. They evaporate almost. And
well, you know, the perfect thing for that would be the little Kohlsteigen, because, you know, there's just enough there to go down in a couple of swallows and cool you off and refresh you, and no chance of it ever getting tepid.
Yeah, these glasses are much the same. Unfortunately, so are the bottles that fill them. And a typical Heineken, small Heineken beer here works out to about $12 U.S.
Woo!
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Oh, man, that'd be enough to make me find a meeting.
Yeah, and if you try to sip it, it turns into warm beer, which is awful. So We've managed to deal with it. We show up with our own bottles of frozen water and watch them melt in front of us.
Which doesn't take long.
No, but you have to stay hydrated.
So, I mean, any dandy good dining, or was the absence of decent clothing a bar to you getting into a good restaurant?
No, the hotel here has 5 restaurants. Every one of them is good. Tonight, for example, we went to a Thai restaurant, since it is a Thai hotel chain, and I ordered deep-fried prawns, king prawns, they were called. These suckers should have had a license plate on them. There were 4 of them. They were huge. And before that, I had a sweet and sour Thai soup with mixed seafood and 2 bottles of Singha Thai beer. And the other guys ordered a couple of different specialties, and we all shared. And the meal took 1.5 hours, and we were all completely full when we were finished, and we all kept saying, God, we got to come back here. There's so many other items on the menu we want to try. We've been there, I guess, 3 times over the last 2 visits, and every time we've ordered something different, every time it's been exceptional. And the maitre d' came by tonight, who knows all of our names and our room numbers, and said, we want you tomorrow night. You'll be our guest at the Capitol Grill, which is their basic bar. And we will, it will be our compliment. And we would ask you to fill out a survey form. And I said, oh, what are we surveying? Well, apparently this hotel is out of the 240 that made the initial cut, is on the list of the 10 single best hotels in the world. And
well, do they get a free plug on the horn?
If it's worth anything, yes.
I mean,
I'll plug them.
Yeah.
Yeah. These guys are good. They really are. And I got to tell you, I sent something along to a couple of folks. I might have copied you on it, of a couple of videos I got. We're in the middle of our wonderful dinner tonight, and an entire frigging drum corps seems to break out outside the restaurant. I decided to wander outside and watch. It was a Jordanian wedding party. Came down here to hold their wedding and their reception. They had about 15 drummers down there doing a marvelous job, and a bagpipe. And it's taking place right in the middle of the hotel lobby.
Stop it, a bagpipe?
A bagpipe with tassels and plaid. And it went on for 45 minutes. Kelly wanted to know if it was sort of an aerobic exercise to get warmed up for the wedding, but the wedding had already happened. But people were dancing inside the circles, and I kept thinking, this is very Appalachian. This is, you know, people getting together and doing a hootenanny in the middle of a hotel lobby. It was fascinating to watch.
So, I can imagine. I mean, tartans, kilts.
Oh, yeah. But, you know, eclectic doesn't begin to describe the experience here. It's really hard to put your finger on it, and quite nice. I enjoyed it.
I can well imagine. You know, one wonders if that's a throwback to the British association with that particular royal house that runs that country these days, that goes back to, you know, about 100 years ago.
Yeah, perhaps. These things go away slowly, don't they?
Well, with a bagpipe, it can never go away fast enough.
Yeah, well, bagpipe proof that there's reincarnation for cats.
Yes. Well, and you know the story about the musical prodigy octopus, right?
Yeah.
The one with the one with the punchline that ends, "Play it. If I can get its pajamas off, I'm gonna it."
Yeah.
By the way, the former segment has been named, courtesy of Carol Baker, "Crotchpot Cooking with Ron and Bob on the Food Porn Network." There's a future. Yeah. There's a future. I'm telling you.
Yeah. Well, my queen,
and that gives rise to another possibility to tickle Jennifer in Australia's funny bone by saying, you know, crotchpot cooking. Yeah, there's always a crusty smear.
Yeah, I heard that lead in. Yeah, I would only encourage folks by saying this country is definitely worth traveling to and visiting. Put it on your list of places to go. It's a marvelous place to attend if you can find ways to deal with the heat. January, February, and March apparently is winter.
Yep, down in the 90s.
Daytime highs are in the 70s. The locals are wearing coats and jackets. The outdoor patios all have their heaters on.
Some places never change. You know, I've got a sister who lives in Mobile, Alabama, on the Gulf Coast. If the temperature drops below 80, she gets out the Irish fisherman sweater.
But yeah.
And she was born and raised in West Virginia, for God's sakes.
Yeah, well, you adapt to it. The locals here, if it drops below 30 degrees, will break out some sort of a light jacket. And the patios fire up the propane patio heaters if it drops below 80 degrees.
I want you to know you're a bad influence, because Randy and PA just quipped, "I bet they didn't have to worry about losing the bagpipers' underwear."
Yeah, he was the only commando there.
But, see what you do? You see what you do?
I know. Anyway, I'm going to be rolling through from Ohio to West Virginia at some point over the next few days. Believe it or not, I'm coming home for about 3 days and then heading out again. So perhaps when I'm rolling through, I'll give you a ring on the way down and make a deposit.
Well, I look forward to hearing from you and look forward to seeing you. And I've already circumvented you at Secret Sandwich, so you lose. They've got your picture.
Yeah, but they don't have the one of me with the goatee.
No, I'll go and scribble it in. I've got one of those white Sharpies.
Now, I was thinking more of something sitting on the deck over near the Gauley Bridge and drinking beer in the sunshine.
Well, they closed that.
Why? Sorry, to all the other folks on the Horn listening who have never been there, it was an interesting experience. Small little place, good beer, good food. What did you do to get them closed down, Bob?
It wasn't me. I mean, they just, you know, because it was all outdoors, you know, one good monsoon season will that right up.
Yeah.
We had a lovely time that afternoon. I mean, any time that you get to pound beers with Agnes, Viking Warrior Princess, I mean, we were one beer away from her getting out her gilded drinking horn.
Well, we'll have to find some excuse then, won't we?
We'll look and we will find.
Always nice to talk to you, sir.
It is always a pleasure. Always a pleasure, Ron. Fly safely. And, you know, my best wishes to your luggage. I bet you it won't sit neglected and unattended without moving for 4 days somewhere on the tarmac in Abu Dhabi.
No, but just to be sure, I'm going out tomorrow, and at Air Canada's expense, I'm picking up a small carry-on bag to put all the really important stuff that I need, like my camera and shaving kit and maybe some underwear. I don't like doing underwear in the sink.
No. No, no. That's one of those where you want to throw it in something, shut the lid, and walk away.
Well, there's the whole process of, okay, what do I do about that side pouch with the bacon in it? You know, you've got to clean everything out before you can wash it. You know what I mean?
Well, that's true. I knew bacon was going to come into this conversation somewhere along the way. It has
you have
to.
Yourself.
Yeah, no, your bad influence continues. Now you've got Randy and PA humming, people who know people are the luckiest people in the world. And that's twice I've sung tonight, so, you know, we'll probably end fundraising with a great big goddamn goose egg for the evening now.
Glad that could help, Bob. Those people are my world, you know what I mean?
And welcome to it, exactly.
Yeah, okay. You take care, sir.
All right, you have a good night there and travel safely home from the sandbox, Ron.
Take care.
Bye now. I never stop being tickled by the tech. I just had it wasn't that long ago that the only broadcast outfits that could do something like that were paying buku bajillion dollars for satellite time. And Jim McKay was sitting there at the ABC Wide World of Sports desk with the, you know, one finger pressed up against the IFB in his ear to make sure that he got all of the transmission. Wow. Just wow. Hey, thanks, Frank. Frank got us started this evening, taking us down to 195 bucks to go in fundraising. Thank you very, very kindly. It is much appreciated indeed. Let's take a little break and maybe retool. You know the numbers, the stress line, 304-663-4676, 304-663-HORN, or 304-574-8178 from anywhere in the world that it's legal to, or Skype to Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn, from anywhere in the world that it's legal to Skype. And it all works up to some pretty amazing conversation radio. Carol, I'm still thinking about the first crotch pot cooking recipe. All right, in honor of the lovely little hotel where Ron is staying, a musical interlude. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. And that's the wrong button. I need a producer. Who am I kidding? I need a keeper. Here we go.
Food and drink, a porcelain throne and an aluminum. magic fingers makes you feel all right. Feel all right, feel all right. Magic fingers makes you feel all right. If you lose the key, this hotel room's got a lot of stuff, but I do believe I've had enough. Call my baby, said, don't you pout. Packing my bags and I'm checking out. Just as soon as you hang up the telephone, stick a candle in the window, I'm coming home. Coming home, coming home. Stick a candle in the window, I'm coming home.
I can't help it. I'm an old DJ. I like to make things sort of sync up. And yeah, that was Jimmy Buffett, but the writer of the song was the late, great, incomparable Steve Goodman. This hotel room. I'll never hear that again without I think of Ron. Sans-culottes. In a hotel room in Abu Dhabi. Not that, I mean, you know, just, you know, okay, without luggage, maybe not, because it's not, I don't think about things like that. Neither does he, but you know, you get the idea. So, it's about 6 minutes, or seven, damn computer, okay, six. Six and a half, five and a half. 5 and a half minutes before the hour. Do I have four? I got four, three. I got four. I got five going once. Going, never mind. I'm Bob Kincaid. It is Thorn in the Side Thursday on the Horn. And, you know, I apologize for not just jumping right into the political cesspool every blessed evening. I mean, we've done that a couple of times this week, but you know, I can't. I just can't. I cannot do that every damned evening. I've got Clinton fatigue. God knows I've got something approaching pandemic level Trump fatigue. But I guess we do have to deal with it. And toward that end, well, you know the latest, right? America's orange dipshit. Thank you, Carol. Thank you. Thank you kindly. Carol just said, "I'm sick of the political cesspool. Tonight was nice, and so was last night too. Just to sit back and be neighborly and." Talk about the things that make life good. To a certain extent, I guess it's unavoidable, though. A quick reminder. Remember, please, at $100 each, we have two prints on offer as gifts courtesy of Jennifer in Australia. They are display quality prints of cave art from France. One of them, stags in a stream, and the other, bison. If you would like one, the other, or both, send me an email and PayPal in the requisite suggested amount. And in return for your kind contribution, Jen will, at her own labor and expense, post them to you just about anywhere on the planet. If you're first in, you get to say, hey, I want the stags, or hey, I want the bison. And, or you can do, you know, hey, I want them both. So that's out there just as a little encouragement to help us finish the week fundraising-wise. And we'll see how it works out. But you've seen the latest. The America's orange dipshit. I mean, look, the gloves are off. At this point in time, do we refer to Donald Trump as anything but? It's a challenge to refer to Donald Trump as anything but a dipshit, a fuckwit, an asshole, a great big giant steaming orange pile of shit. Not because of any political vitriol, but because he is. And outside Putin's Russia, you'd be hard-pressed to find anybody who, of a functioning mind who would disagree. I mention this because of the kerfuffle that now obtains over his latest pronouncement that that Barack Obama founded. That's the term, isn't it, that he used? He founded ISIS. He referred to Barack Obama as the founder of ISIS today. Here's how bad it is. Right-wing gas bag and beneficiary of the 2016 presidential cycle, Hugh Hewitt, interviewed the toxic orange tomato bug. And he tried to provide some philosophical space whereby the big steaming orange pile of shit could walk himself back into a space where his otherwise indefensible remarks would be defensible. Hewitt asking him, what you mean by that is Obama founded ISIS metaphorically because he pulled out of Iraq and it created a power vacuum that was filled by ISIS. And because the big steaming orange pile of shit that is Donald J. Trump, millionaire who owns a mansion and a yacht, has the introspection of a dung beetle, he said, no, I meant he's the founder of ISIS. And he wasn't having anything. I mean, damn. Turn to some radio, some other radio program, internet, terrestrial, satellite, what have you, if you want stirring, full-throated defenses of Barack Obama's each and every policy and declaration, undying love declarations that you know, ice cream, not here. But damn. I mean, this is a step further. This is a step past Kenyan Muslin. This is an accusation. Well, I don't have to explain it to you. We don't have to explain it to each other. We get it. But in the context of recent comments about you know, maybe somebody might want to perform a Second Amendment remedy on Hillary Clinton. They really are. These Trumpansies, these followers of Trumple Thin Skin, as Carol brilliantly calls him. They're trying to get something seriously nasty going in this country. But even beyond that, the question that was posed by Hugh Hewitt ignores facts, ignores reality. And yes, Texas Betsy, you're right. What it is, that ISIS comment, is another incitement to assassination. Because that's what we do to ISIS leaders, right? Says Texas Betsy, right. They deserve a proper killing. And only in the most chilling of moments, I think, do we, on this side of the debate, sit back and realize, to our horror, how many millions of Americans there are who would take Donald Trump up on both of those offers if they could just figure out a way to do it. If they could just get past the Secret Service. A suggestion coming in from Brother Deacon Asa. Big steaming orange pile of shit is quite the mouthful, Brother Bob. Better thine than mine. May I suggest the Turd Reich in its stead? That ain't bad. That ain't bad. Carol adds that it's an indictment of the true nature of racism and sexism in America. It is all of these things. You've got a whole bunch of Republicans calling on the GOP, the RNC, to turn the spigot off on funding for his campaign. Not that there's much of that in the first place. Note coming from another member of the fraternity of Steve in Vermont. Orange is the new ... Bob, I'm in free fall. Trump, a ringer, all the Manchurian candidate stuff is being put into motion. I don't discount that. But even if that's the case, I mean, I remember back when Jesse Ventura was a comedy candidate for governor of Minnesota, and we all woke up one morning and went, well, they did that. The risk is tremendous. And once again, from the department of, well, Hillary's certainly not making anything any easier. This. Namely, a little something courtesy of the Nation. I found this on Facebook, courtesy of Chris in Germany. Greater names than mine apparently are also afflicted with the what the disease. Every time they see Hillary Clinton's name and Henry Kissinger's in the same sentence. Greg Grandin, a professor of history at NYU, author of a book called Kissinger's Shadow, authored an opinion piece for The Nation. It was titled, Hillary Clinton's Embrace of Kissinger is Inexcusable. Professor Grandin writes, word comes from Politico, and we discussed this a couple of nights ago, that Hillary Clinton is courting the endorsement of Henry Kissinger. No surprise, Kissinger and the Clintons go back a ways to when Bill, in the early 1990s, sought out Kissinger's support to pass NAFTA and to, in the words of the economist Jeff Foe, serve as the perfect tutor for a new Democratic president trying to convince Republicans and their business allies that they could count on him to champion Reagan's vision. Hillary has continued the apprenticeship, soliciting Kissinger's advice and calling him friend. Professor Grandin suggests Bernie Sanders and Sanders supporters and surrogates should use the Politico story to draw a line, making clear that they will withdraw their support of Clinton if Clinton accepts Kissinger's endorsement. If Sanders stands for anything, it is the promise of decency and civil equality, qualities that he has worked hard to bestow on Clinton since the Democratic National Convention. By accepting Kissinger's endorsement, Clinton wouldn't just be mocking that gift. She'd be sending the clearest signal yet to grassroots peace and social justice Democrats that her presidency wouldn't be a popular front against Trumpian fascism. It would be bloody business as usual. You'd really love to be a fly on the wall in that campaign, wouldn't you? Do you suppose anyone inside that campaign has the courage to look at her, you know, way up in the thin oxygen area? How about you, David Brock? No, never mind. How about you, Robbie Mook? No, never mind. Does anybody have the courage in that campaign to look at her and go, Hills, you realize that you're shitting all over the Democratic base playing footsie with that war criminal, don't you, Hills, don't you? Because, you know, she is. And, you know, there's some fresh data out there. Really awful, disgusting, fresh data. Going back to, say, 1976, when Kissinger was encouraging slaughter in Argentina on the way out of the Ford administration, encouraging Argentina to get it taken care of quickly. And that is the endorsement that Hillary Clinton is seeking. I don't know. I don't know. Hey, let's go over to the Skype line and invite Ms. Carol out onto the ledge. Come on out, Carol.
Well, hello, Mr. Kincaid. Can you hear me?
I hear you well, thank you.
Well, I just had been reading all this nonsense about Trump's call to assassinate Hillary, and I read just a fascinating article today in the Dallas Observer that really struck a chord with me. A guy named Jim Schutz wrote it. And it was posted really early this morning, and it was called, entitled Unrepudiated and Unabated, Trump's Climate of Rage Will Find Its Oswald, which got my attention.
Yeah, that's chilling.
Because he starts it out talking about the historical significance of what the political climate was in Dallas back in '63 and what led up to it. And he said, Dallas knows a thing or two about assassination conspiracies. We know that the more important conspirator is usually the political climate, not the shooter. Properly stoked with hate, violence, and dehumanizing vilification, the climate will find a shooter. A Lee Harvey Oswald will step forward to kill JFK. A Yigal Amir will volunteer to murder Yitzhak Rabin, as Thomas L. Friedman argued forcefully 2 days ago on the New York Times op-ed page. And he talks about, like, 3 decades earlier, he had been interviewed the late Stanley Marcus, who was the head of Needless Markup in, Nima Marcus in Dallas. And he had kind of lived through all the years of extremism in Dallas that kind of led up to the 63 assassination of Kennedy. And when he interviewed him in the 1980s, you know, that was during a time when there was this, like, really kind of strong belief about the conspiracy theories of what happened to Kennedy. What Marcus was trying to explain to him was, as he put it, a reality far worse than a conspiracy, less neatly satisfying and much more broadly incriminating. And I mean incriminating in GOP leadership, incriminating in what's kind of laying in the belly of the beast of Americans. And that is this deep-seated burning bigotry and hatred and extremism. And we had kind of gotten it pushed at bay after they killed Kennedy. But there's kind of this, if you think about it, Bob, there's this really kind of mythology that surrounds Kennedy. And people not of our generation, who are much younger than us, have this belief that Kennedy was universally beloved. And
nothing could be further from the truth.
Nothing could be further from the truth. He was so reviled by the right, and they were so determined to kind of figure out a way to get him. And Kennedy is so lucky that he served back. I mean, to a point, he's lucky that he served back then and not now, or his shenanigans with the women and everything would never have stayed secret. But he said, he talked about how this kind of climate of hatred had kind of ginned up all these kind of crazy people, and Dallas had kind of become this epicenter of it, and how Lyndon Johnson, who was from Texas, and his wife were afraid to go to Dallas. Adlai Stevenson's car was attacked in Dallas, and they barely got out of there alive. And he said the climate of extremism wasn't just limited to public events, even though Marcus was a recognized leader in the community. He'd even found kind of social life difficult because he couldn't even go to a dinner party without getting into some ugly discussion.
Oh, and no. And I mean, let's remember something, just not to interrupt, but just to,
yeah,
it was a national climate.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that we know, for instance, is that when Kennedy was killed, the Reagans didn't cancel a dinner party they had,
no.
You know, where people like John Wayne were coming over,
and were
celebrating
and
it.
It was a quiet celebration. Yes, exactly, exactly. Yeah, John Wayne was a real douchebag.
Well, I mean, then there's Cold Hamburger Reagan.
Exactly. But he said that, and he specifically talked about Marcus blamed the local media, and he kind of laid into the Dallas Morning News, kind of holding them responsible for a good deal of the atmosphere that kind of preceded the assassination and the assassination itself. And he felt that they were as answerable to any single institution because they never repudiated the lies that were coming out of the extremist mouth about Kennedy. And he said, and in fact, they kind of like helped to gin it up. And we're experiencing that very same thing today. I mean, it isn't just Fox News. Journalism is dead. It's been so kind of curved away. The old-fashioned newsroom is gone. And the money for, kind of investigative journalism, that's gone. Newspapers are nothing more than outlets for press releases. Journalism
is stenography. Yeah. I mean, as a separate topic, with the Barack Obama was the founder of ISIS comment. Well, the New York Times Magazine has devoted its latest entire dead tree hard copy issue to the chaos in the Middle East that has transpired since the dim leaders' decision to go to war there. But, and I haven't read it yet, I'm gonna. But the first question that occurred to me, Carol, is mm-hmm. I wonder if anywhere in the New York Times Magazine's full issue coverage will there be any mention of the fact that the New York Times mm-hmm. via Judith Miller's stenography of Scooter Libby and Count Dicula was personally responsible for the mad rush into that disaster?
Absolutely. But he talks further about, he said, really the kind of the key ingredient, that the thing that kind of bends history in one way or another is the repudiation. He said, and it's like that John McCain moment in 2008 when the old woman stood up and went, "He's an Arab." And McCain got booed and everything else when this, kind of hyper crowd was screaming at him when he was trying to tell this woman that Barack Obama wasn't an Arab. He said, "No, ma'am. He's a decent family man and a citizen. And I just happen to have disagreements with him on fundamental issues. And that's what this campaign is about." And to a good extent, I mean, that cost McCain.
Well, and it's and the opposite of that is equally true, Carol, because the great big steaming orange pile of shit has figured out not to do that. If a woman stands up in one of his clavern rallies and says he's a Muslim, he'll say, "Damn Skippy."
That's right. And he said, so essentially, kind of what happened in Dallas was an inconvenient truth, in that the media, and we all are conspirators when we fail to repudiate people like Trump, who sit and scream and call people communists and they're not really Americans and question their patriotism. And he says, I'm sick and tired of personality profiles on Trump. I can't read them anymore. I'd rather read the personality profile of a tree stump. We know what he is. He ducks, he dodges, he smirks, he winks, he brags about how much he wants to beat people up. He tells jokes about the gun lobby stopping Hillary Clinton. And mainly he pokes, stabs, weaves, and cheers the crowd on with that shrug and Mussolini look away, that gesture that means, you know what to do. So he said what's really missing is the repudiation. And he ended it beautifully. He said, that's the fulcrum, the point of resistance that will bend the future to the good or not. Marcus knew that if leadership does not effectively repudiate a climate of extremism, then eventually that climate will discover and recruit its Oswald. The climate alone will send him and her on the climate's mission. Nobody needs a meeting or a secret code. It's all right there in front of us as we speak, happening in real time. So essentially, what he was saying was, it doesn't need a conspiracy. It doesn't need a plan or a secret meeting. You just start the ball rolling downhill. You sit back and you let momentum take over.
And they've been trying to do that for 8 years, Carol.
They have been trying to do that for 8 years. And that's why the GOP not repudiating Trump, and even those who are, it's like, well, it's a little late because he's been singing the song of your people the whole time. Has he not?
He absolutely has. And the current speechifying is nothing but recycled, trickle-down, you know, garbage.
Exactly. So if somebody shoots Hillary, it's not going to be because, you know, there's, you're going to see article after article, there's blood on Trump's hands. You know what? There's kind of blood on everybody's hands who did not come out and say from the beginning, we don't talk like this. This is not the American way. She is not Hitler. She is not mentally unhinged. She's not a lot of things. We know what she is, okay? But we also know what she's not. And that's what they're not saying. And that's really the crux of it all. And I really appreciated this article because it didn't try to analyze Donald Trump, you know, in this quasi-psychological way that all of these articles are coming out with, because there's really a little bit of Trump in all of that kind of uneducated, white, angry, kind of seething underbelly of the electorate that votes every time. You know what I mean?
And I think it's important that we point out, Carol, that they aren't new.
No.
Okay,
no.
they've been there since the John Birch Society was accusing Dwight David Eisenhower of being a commie stooge.
Exactly. But it's when... But, I mean, we all have a responsibility to quietly, and I think at some point, you know, I was always taught, you know, when dealing with kids that if they're kind of amped up at a 6, you can't go to a 7 or they just jump to an 8. You have to talk to them. If, you know, if they're at a 7, you got to talk to them at a 4 or 5 and kind of slowly bring them down until you can reason with them. And I hear so much screaming and noise, and it's why I just poke fun at all of this stuff. It's not that I don't take it seriously, because I think anybody who reads the stuff that I write knows I take it very, very seriously. But I have to be able to kind of turn it on its side and look at it in the ridiculous way that it really is, and kind of put it out there for people.
Yeah, because when you turn it on that oblique angle, it resembles something else entirely.
It really does. And the truth is always there. The players are always there, but it allows us to kind of go in chuckling a little bit, and then you go, oh. But people, it kind of makes them kind of take that little laugh to begin with, and it diffuses the situation. And it's why I write the way that I do. And it's why I kind of satirically kind of go after him and his moronic followers, these raging, fear-based, crazy people who just think he's the be-all, end-all. You know, they want to demonize people who are educated. They will demonize people who speak reasonably. You know, they love Trump. Talk about wanting to have a candidate that they want to go have a beer with. You know, that's the guy that they want to go have a beer with, not realizing that he couldn't wash the stench of these people off fast enough.
Oh, hell no. And also, by the same token, yeah, that's where, I mean, I feel like I speak redneck pretty good.
You do.
And it's like, wait a minute, guys, you want a president you can have a beer with? We're talking about somebody you'd sit down at a bar with and would not ride home with after those beers.
Exactly.
And you want to give that guy the nuclear football.
But they like him because he talks in the same kind of disjointed, angry rhetoric that they relate to, because they don't want to sit down and, you know, read or accept things that are not within their comfort zone. I read things that aren't within my comfort zone all the time. Yes, sometimes I have to resist the urge to vomit, but I have this need to try and understand where these people come from. It's, my conclusion is almost always the same. It is always from an uneducated, fear-based, zero-sum game point of view. If these people are being treated fairly, well, then that means that I will be treated less fairly. If these people are making a fair living wage, well, then that means that I won't be. They don't realize that there's such a thing as enough for all of us.
Yeah, that comes of what I consider a sort of mercantilist approach.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whereas, you know, if the Kingdom of Spain has all the silver, that means no one else has any silver.
Exactly.
So we have to go out and put privateers to sea on the raging main and the you know, Pirates of the Caribbean and all of that stuff. But we're supposed to be past that kind of economics.
Well, and I would like to think that we've evolved enough that we're past that kind of childish point of view. I mean, it really is quite childish when you get right down to it, because we figured out how to share in kindergarten. We figured out that we didn't have to have all of the blocks, that if we actually shared them with someone, they brought new ideas to the table, and it was actually fun to kind of build relationships and forts with these people. You know what I'm saying?
Well, yeah.
And so we got that message, and somehow I get the feeling that all these people were toilet trained at gunpoint and never breastfed and completely unloved. And it's not like I had this golden glistening childhood, but I was lucky enough to know I was loved, and I came from a big family, and, you know, my mother wasn't probably the most mentally stable person, but my father made a point of making sure that each one of us understood and knew that we were loved unconditionally. And the one thing that my father kind of ingrained in me is that he said, you're unique, you are different from everybody else, and you're so worthy of love. You are so worthy of being listened to. And we would sit around the table during the Vietnam War era with the news on the background in the TV, and my father would go around the dinner table and ask each of us what we thought about a world event and because he was interested in how we perceived it. And he would kind of analyze in his head kind of what it was that we were saying and trying to figure out how we got that from a child's perspective. And then he would just kind of feed us little facts and little historical perspectives to kind of turn us a little bit more off the direction of the ditch and kind of lead us towards the truth. He led us. He didn't lecture us. But he wanted us to have opinions. You know, and I was 5 years old sitting at the table, and it's like, what do you think of the Vietnam War? I don't know, Dad. You know,
I'm five.
You know, I'm five. And he's like, I don't care if you're five. You're affected by this, and you're going to know, which is why I probably got it ingrained at such an early age to be so kind of politically aware of how things affect me. That's why when Vicky and I started our radio show, it was particularly to talk about how political issues affected women in particular. Because women are the people that are kind of, well, women and minorities and, you know, people of color and anybody who's not white, male, rich, you know, you know the game.
Yeah. And, yes.
And it's so that women could kind of put the political climate in a perspective of how it affected them. And all of that was kind of born out of my father needing me to understand how everything is, you know, that spider web effect, how you pluck one string and it vibrates down and how it affects you. And so that's why the words that are being spoken and the anger that's being kind of built up and fed, you know, to get these people even angrier, that's what frightens me so much. It's because I just have this feeling. I've had this feeling for 8 years. I've worried that Barack Obama would never complete his 8 years. I was sure somebody would get him. Because they've
And there have been more threats against him in those 8 years than any other president in the history of this country.
And Hillary will probably face very much the same thing. Because I told you years ago that as soon as, if she ever got the nomination and managed to get the presidency, those people would do a hard right turn from the blatant bigotry to blatant sexism. And I see it every day. And I've got enough reasons not to like her, but it angers me to sit and listen to some of this.
Well, we're not voting for who our seventh grade crush is.
Well, and we're not voting for I've never voted for genitals.
No.
I've never voted for genitals. I've always been far more interested with what was between their ears and what was buried in their chest. But, you know, hey, I'm a liberal.
Well, I drill it down a little further. I say I refuse to be a chromosomal voter.
Exactly.
Because, well, I don't want to open myself up to, but... Okay, so the craziness that will surround her,
sure.
I got Exhibit 1 here, Your Honor.
Go ahead, Counselor.
You ever heard of an outfit called Public Policy Polling?
Yes.
They do that, public policy polling. They
yes.
poll on public policy. So they decided, and this comes courtesy of Pink News, which is a real website, not The Onion. They note that Clinton has a lead, a slim lead, of like 43% to 41% in North Carolina. This is a North Carolina-specific poll, Carol.
Mm-hmm.
And so they wanted to find out what people thought about Hillary Clinton in North Carolina. You might want to get the hockey puck.
No, thanks. I just got my dental work done.
Yep. Well, I'm a giver.
I'll bite my tongue instead.
Presented with the question, 41% of Trump voters in North Carolina said, yes, Hillary Clinton is, in fact, the devil. I start a little bit of shtick a week ago. Public policy polling follows up in North Carolina and turns it into reality.
Well,
41% of Trump voters in North Carolina are convinced that Hillary Clinton is the physical, earthly manifestation of the Prince of fucking Darkness, okay?
Wasn't Obama the Antichrist? Before that, Bubba was the Antichrist?
Yes.
I've been listening to this shit for years.
And... welcome to the next four if she wins. So it breaks out kind of interestingly. 41% are certain she's the devil.
Uh-huh.
17% of Trump voters in North Carolina, which means 17% of 41% of voters in North Carolina aren't really sure one way or the other.
Mm-hmm.
The other 42%, let's see, 42, 83, yep. The other 42% said, no, she's not the devil. Only 42% of Trump voters in North Carolina think that Hillary Clinton's not the devil. I mean, just kind of sit down and let that roll around in your head for a little bit.
I can't because I'm sorry. I don't believe in the Easter Bunny. I don't believe in Santa Claus. I don't believe in the silliness that they believe in. And that is not to say, I mean, most of my friends are Christians. Fine. Whatever. It's your thing. And And the only reason that I really love my Christian friends is that they seem to accept the, you know, the parts of the Bible that I think are useful. The part about loving your neighbor and, you know, treating people as you would like to be treated. And
you mean not the part about where if a woman gets raped, she's supposed to be killed by the people of the city outside the city gates?
Yeah, they kind of don't listen to that part.
Yep.
Of course, you know, the Republican Jesus people don't really listen to that part when it's their precious lumpkin, but...
Well, if it's any consolation, and it's yes. not, Carol, there were some more questions asked. 40% of the Trump voters said they agree that Acorn will steal the election for Hillary Clinton.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
Acorn, I might note, has not even existed since 2010. So it'll be like zombie Acorn.
Oh, well, that's even scarier.
Brains. Well, the nice thing is, if the zombies come back looking for brains, they'll leave all the Trump voters, all the Trump pansies, alone.
Yeah, they're safe, aren't they? So I don't know what they're worried about. Oh, Jesus. You can tell these people anything and they don't care. I mean, they'll believe it because it fits neatly into their ideological bubble. And anything that's negative about her, they're going to believe.
And they've already decided to the tune of 69% that if Hillary wins, it won't be because more people voted for her.
She rigged the election.
The election results are rigged for her.
That's right. Built on the corpse of Vince Foster.
Hillary Clinton's lesbian lover.
Yeah, something like that.
We got to giggle a little bit.
Well, I have to, because if I don't, I'll go insane.
But, you know, meanwhile, so Trump calls for somebody to blow her away.
Yeah.
And, you know, how does Eddie Munster, third in line to the presidency, respond? Well, that was just a bad joke gone bad. That was a joke gone bad.
Then it's not a joke.
Well, would it have been a joke gone bad if he'd... because, you know, the big steaming orange pile of shit was less than vigorous in his endorsement of Paul Ryan. Would it have been a joke gone bad if he had suggested that some badger take a shooting iron out and take care of business that way down in Janesville?
Oh, I'm sure it wouldn't have been nearly as funny. But, you know, on that line, you know, in keeping with my, you know, kind of snark, I said, I guess when Trump went to see Clint Eastwood's movie In the Line of Fire, he was the only one in the audience rooting for John Malkovich. Well, now he's not the only one.
No, we got a whole country.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's why I come back to it, Carol. That's why I call this our national IQ test.
Oh, well, we fail miserably.
Well, I mean, Missouri may not fail. West Virginia is gonna fail.
I don't know. I was on my... tonight. I was so tired. And I turned right off of Troost Avenue to go down to Holmes. And I swung out a little too far into the wrong lane. And this guy was laying on the horn. And I was like, oops, sorry. I waved. I said I was sorry. We get to the light. He gets right up next to me, rolls down his window, and I see his big sticker in the back window that he's new United States Marine. And he starts screaming at me about, you know, by God, he served his country, and I could show some respect. And I was like, you know, dude, I finally just rolled my head back up into my eyes, made the sign of the cross, put my hands together, and pretended I was praying. And he shut up. He just shut up.
And this was over what?
I cut him off in traffic. I didn't see him.
So you didn't see him, but you were supposed to show him respect because he was a new United States Marine?
Yes. You know, my car doesn't have air, and the boss loaned me this big, you know, land barge. So I'm driving this big Honda Odyssey van that you cannot see out of. I hate that thing for that reason. But it's got good air.
And in 100 degree Kansas City, one cannot overstate the value of that.
Indeed. But it's supposed to get really nice here in a few days. Really nice in a few days. Like temperatures below 80. So I'm looking forward to getting my spritzy little Mazda 3 back and taking her out down the highway. So, but yeah, when I started to get the "I'm a new United States Marine and you can show me some respect," I was like, well, thoughts and prayers. I didn't know what to say. I was like, I don't give a shit. You know, I'm tired. I didn't see you. I'm sorry. But the sorry didn't go very far. So I just decided let us pray.
Amen, Sister Carol. Amen.
But when I did that, I just saw him roll his eyes and just roll his window up and move forward. And I was like, yeah, that's pretty good.
Good. I spend a lot more time on the road these days than I would like to, because I got to take Ferg to work in the morning, and then as soon as I get off the air every night, I go pick him up.
It sucks.
It's about about 125 miles a day that, you know.
That's kind of roughly what I drive every day.
Yeah. And, not road rage
because
or anything.
Because jobs are so plentiful in Hooterville.
Does nobody know the rules of the road anymore?
You know, I guess not. Well, you'd be amazed at the number of people who are low on blinker fluid. Seriously. I mean, there is a shortage here.
The blinker dipstick is bone dry.
It is. It's the only, and when I say that to myself, it just helps me to laugh and move on.
Today it was the Ohioan, and it seems like, sorry, I mean, I'm not gooning, but it's always an Ohioan, it's a 55 mile an hour, 4-lane highway. And they're doing, 40.
Oh, yeah.
In the left lane. No blinker. It's not like they're getting ready to turn left 6 miles down the road or anything.
Oh, yeah.
They're just, doing 40 in the left lane because the view's better.
I go through this all day long. My office is 3 blocks from the state line. And I'm telling you, I have to... I come home every night to wash the stench of Kansas off of
now,
me.
Now, don't make the marvelously coherent Diane from Kansas stand call in to defend the honor of Kansas.
She is the only good thing I've found in there. And by the way, I miss her and I wish she'd call in. So, yes, Diane, I'm trying to conjure you, girl. But because I think of her every time I go over there. But, oh my God.
I don't want to be a jerk on the highway, but. Meanwhile, there's an uninterrupted string of traffic in the right lane.
Yeah.
Where, Mr. and Mrs. Buckeye should be. And they're not. And they have no interest in being over there. And all I want to do is set my little cruise control to 55 miles an hour and go drop the boy off. And I won't because this is the highway. There are rules. It's not Vietnam.
Exactly.
I won't pass in the right lane because, among other things, it's goddamn dangerous.
Yeah.
Because the minute I start trying to pass Emery and Eileen in the right lane, they're going to decide the right lane is where they need to be.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And I'll be touring a ditch.
Oh yeah.
And there are even signals, if you're in the in the left lane, you're in the left lane, isn't the international signal that you hit your left blinker?
Yes.
And that tells them to get over. Yes. No, they just assumed I was turning left.
Well, that's because they don't have any blinker fluid, so they don't know what those are.
And because it seems really rude to resort to the high beams.
I know. I know. Well, the only saving grace I have is, you know, I've worked for dealers for so long that I drive on dealer plates. And so when they come in every year, I find, you know, it's got your dealer, the D and your dealer number, and then a dash, and then the two letters that come after it.
Right, right.
Well, last year I had KC for Kansas City. And then this year they all started with M, so I picked MF.
Beautiful, beautiful, just
that's,
beautiful.
That's my passive aggressive message to all the people who follow me, is that I have the MF letter signet. Oh, hi, Steve.
Oh, Cat Stevens is out and about. Cool.
He is. He's talking. He's feeling somewhat ignored. So.
Oh, that'll never do.
Oh, hello, son. He's right up here. He jumped right up from the floor onto my shoulder. Yes, he wants to be on the radio, so.
Well, Brother Deacon Gerald wants to know if you have time to learn about Jesus' plan for your life.
Oh, I already know Jesus' plan for my life, and he's the fucker in the left lane.
Nobody fucks with the Jesus. Dear Lord, he writes, we gather here this evening to ask you to pray for Sister Carol Baker and to forgive her for her transgressions against a bona fide United States Marine, even though she didn't know he was one. Lord, we ask that you watch over her and help her mend her sinful ways. And ask you to forgive Sister Carol Baker in Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen.
Amen. And please, Jesus, keep Emery and Marveline out of the left lane on US 19 before Bob has a baby.
Indeed. why thank you. I'd like to thank the building and grounds?
Yes, he's the deacon in charge of the building and grounds committee of the Cathedral of Common Sense.
I gotcha.
Any more news out of the horrifying water slide story, Carol?
Yeah, you know that kid was decapitated, don't you?
Yeah.
It was bad. It was bad. That's what they kind of weren't saying, but they, of course, you know, in their infinite wisdom and good taste, got a news chopper up there to make sure that they got pictures.
The bubble-headed bleach blonde comes on at 5. She can tell you about the water slide disaster with a gleam in her eye.
Indeed. And it's just been ongoing. But, you know, Mom and Daddy are so happy that he's going to be in the presence of our Lord. And I'm sitting there going, you know, but, like, do something about the laws that allowed this to happen.
Well, that's the thing. I'm wondering if good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, gun-dementalist, amosexual Governor Sam Brownback has made any mention of the fact that it might be a good idea to, you know, have some safety regulations about these damn things.
Well, no. Bob, why do you hate America?
I know. Why do I hate Kansas?
Well, I know why I hate Kansas.
You know, we talk about something like the Kansas legislature passing a safety regulation for decapitating water slides, and I'm reminded of a Kansas song called Miracles Out of Nowhere.
Yes.
God help me, I'm a DJ.
Yes, but the thing is like the this is the strangest city I've ever been in that because the only difference between Kansas City, Missouri and Kansas City, Kansas is they used to say 19 miles, but now it's all just one big city with a river running through the middle of it. And, but the downtown is, if you're on the Missouri side, Kansas City, Missouri downtown is like, you know, the Golden Jewel is the Country Club Plaza and that's where all the money is. You go to Kansas City, Kansas and it's kind of a slum. But you get out into the suburbs and, you know, Missouri side is where all the poor white trash live. And then you go to Johnson County. And I'm sorry, I have not had a good week dealing with these people in Johnson County. I have been up every night trying to negotiate deals with real estate agents and everything else, trying to get these people happy to get these deals done. And it's like they just don't feel like they have to play by the same rules. And it's like, I can't help it if your homeowners association is demanding that you do this and the city demands you do this. And if you want to buy a $500,000 home, living next door to the Snot Rocks in a Tony neighborhood, then you got to play by the rules. And by God, that this guy got away with it. He fixed it to where the buyer had to pay the difference in the bill, and we have 72 hours to re-roof this house, and it's a big house. So,
or the deal goes to hell.
So basically,
no pressure.
No pressure at all. I personally drove the tear-off trailer over there today and put it in the driveway. I went and paid for all the materials to be delivered. They'll be there first thing in the morning. I've got two crews that are going to be on this one. You can only put so many guys on a roof before they get in each other's way. And got this thing all laid out, but they're going to be working like dogs tomorrow.
Oh, Jesus, in that heat.
And Saturday.
How do they not collapse in the heat?
Listen, tomorrow it's supposed to be 10 degrees cooler tomorrow. So how these guys do it, I will never know. They are absolutely rock stars in my eyes. Because I'll tell you, that day that it was 106.
Kind of puts the big bullshit to T-Rump's claim of they're not sending their best. Because I'm guessing they could out-roof a bunch of white boy roofers most any day of the week, right?
Do you know how many times a week I get, like, a white roofing company come to my door and go, yeah, I need me some Mexicans? Well, first of all, get the fuck out because, you know, I hire men, irrespective of their nationality. The fact that all of my roofers are Mexican is because these guys are working maniacs. It's the quality of their work and their work ethic that I admire so much. And the fact that they get it done and they don't do it with, you know, 15 breaks a day, and they just get up there and get it done because they get paid by the square. They don't care. They will work until they drop. They don't care.
That's kind of downright American, ain't it?
It is exactly American. It's the most American thing there could be.
By the way, you've got a message coming from Hoghead in the chat room.
Yes.
Hoghead says, tell Carol I run trains through Leawood. They don't like my horn. And I don't dare block a road crossing there. They call the police.
I'll bet they do. Yeah, Leawood is like, that's big money, deep red Republican, Trump-loving fuckwits.
Yep. Hey, just had I gotta share this before we run out the door, Carol.
Yes.
I just had some lovely news in from Chris in the Northwest Territories.
Yes.
Chris has put a $150 challenge on the table to help, A, keep us out of a hole for this evening, and B, to finish off the week to the good. So if there's
a star.
Yeah. Isn't Chris awesome?
Yes.
You know, Chris even tried to buck the system and send me some smoked fish from Canada. Mm. Wasn't happening, but it wasn't for want of trying.
Indeed.
That would be a huge help. So there's, 10 at 15, 15 at 10, 1 at 150, 3 at 50, 2 at 75, whatever, to meet Chris's finish the week to the good challenge from the Northwest Territories.
Well, you know, I do love givers.
Yes, you do.
I'm also a woman who puts her money where her mouth is, and I do give regularly and generously. So
yes, you do. Yes, you do.
Quietly.
Far in excess of. You know what I mean.
But still, you know, we keep the lights on.
Well, it's worth having this little community. There seems to be a consensus on that.
Well, it is, because I think that we are privileged to get some of the best conversation and have some of the most cogent thought that I hear on radio anywhere.
And I know there are people out there who are a lot better at just doing the steady drumbeat of politics, 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 politics. Maybe it's a shortcoming in me, Carol. I can't.
I think the thing that I like about this show is that it's not just politics. It's a lot of what we were talking about earlier. We like to put things in historical context because I don't think you can understand where you're going until you know where we've been. And this is a thoughtful family of listeners who think beyond the headlines or short blurbs on social media. And they do listen and they do read. And we sometimes disagree. We sometimes disagree vehemently. But in the end...
But about 99.1% of the time, we do so understanding that we're a community that's trying to sort things out.
I do love these people. I do. I mean, all of them. I miss Bill horribly. You know, I love the people who call in. The people in the chat room have always added so much to it. There's a real kind of quirky family that we've put together here, but these are smart people and these are my friends and these are people that I would do anything for.
And so, you know that we've seen that in action, Carol. We've seen that in action. Yeah. Now I have to end on one note.
Yeah.
You have got to go to that particular grocery store and you have and just next chance you get to fix Mr. Carol a pan of Kaneka sausage.
I
want a review.
The grocery store. I went today.
They didn't have it?
No, they had it. It's here.
Okay, because I want to hear an audio report of the big old grin across Mr. Carroll's face.
Yeah, there's usually only one thing that puts a grin on Mr. Carroll's face. Everything else is kind of quiet.
Oh well, I'm willing to wager that this may be the second thing.
Okay, we'll see. We'll see because we'll find out on Saturday morning.
Okay. Okay. And you know, no cheating by pre-grinning him.
I'm a hey, you get your thrill on Blueberry Hill, he'll get his.
Carol, have a lovely evening. Careful scooting back into the window there. You know they tend to stare up the Trumpansies do, but I got to tell you, you did a lovely job. I think you done burnt right through that one red polyester Make America Great Again hat.
There you go. But I would like to say thanks to everybody who listens and participates and gives, because it makes it all worth it.
Amen. It does. It does. It does. Carol Baker, thank you so much.
Have a wonderful night, Bob.
You have a lovely night. And if I don't hear from you again, a wonderful weekend.
You'll hear from me again. I'm not going to die.
Well, no, I mean, between now and more and Monday.
Oh, okay.
That was just a wish for the Saturday to be good. I'm trying not to be overt, damn it.
I got to work on Saturday.
Well, you said something about Saturday morning.
Well, Sunday morning.
Okay. All right. That's fair. All right. Carol, take care. Talk to you
soon. Thoughts and prayers, y'all.
Thoughts and prayers. Later. The irrepressible one and only Carol Baker. And it's time to get out of here. Thanks very kindly for the challenge, Chris. Hopefully it will be responded to in the overnight hours. Thanks to all of you who participate however you do. Thanks to you for your participation in keeping us on air. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.